Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
He was saying just now, he is no stranger to South Africans. Rian Munster, you are this explorer extraordinaire. I mean, at this point, I think your name is just associated with being adventurous. The specifics of that, though, include being the first person to circumnavigate the coast of Africa by bicycle, 37,000 kilometers through 34 countries over 2 years and 2 months. In July 2009, the first person to kayak 5,000 kilometers around Madagascar alone and unaided. It's just massively impressive. And what's perhaps even more impressive than that is that you managed to date Fusty for 17 years. Yeah. Before there was some form of commitment here, which happened a few days ago.
Listen, we've been together a long time, but when you mention those journeys, I mean, it's where I started when I was really, I think, just so foolish and I love the word naive. I used to get criticized for it before, but when I did those journeys those years ago, I was naive and I think I was a bit dumb. But there has been a career where Fusty, I think, has been the one that stuck around for me, and it was always good coming back to her. You know, when you go away for a little while and then you start getting homesick, you normally get homesick not for the structures and the buildings and the bricks and the mortar waiting for you. It's for the people. Uh-huh. And that's what you – and I think I was always homesick towards the end of my journeys when I was a bit emotional. I think people have seen some of my stories on TV, and the emotions have only been because I want to go home, you know. Yeah. I want to see Fusty again.
Fusty, 17 years you put up with this oak dating you. Why? What has he got that no other person that you've met has?
He's got everything that no other person has. I'm very lucky. You say I stuck around. It was actually a pleasure to stick around with Rian. And in 2014, I got to go on an adventure with him. And who gets to do that? So I'm very privileged, and it was an amazing adventure. We became the first people to have ever rode from Africa to North America.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so yeah. It's easy. It's easy sticking around with him.
So, of course, the 14th of May, it was a couple of days ago, after dating for 17 years, you got married, and we're going to speak about your honeymoon plans, which are non-traditional in a second, but non-traditional in a very good way.
Yeah.
I think in order to really get to the essence and the core of what's so amazing about what you do, let's go with this question. For each of you, what is life about, and what should we be looking to get out of life to be fulfilled?
You probably don't have to ask us. Facebook will tell you. No, that's a joke. We get a world that's just littered with quotes of other people and what they say is important and what life should be about. Goodness gracious. And first, I may reiterate this, but we see so many people talking hogwash day in, day out. You know, there's an ocean between saying and doing. It's one of my sayings. If you feel that gut feel and it says to you, come on, man, you've got to be doing more and you can be more. And even if others around you don't appreciate it immediately, they will. Because your heart's going to be in it. You're not going to have to be convinced because of a salary. You're going to be absolutely convinced because your heart tells you so. So if you love something and you think there's a way of making a living, not making money, making a living, out of it, you've got to go into it. You've got to get stuck in it wholeheartedly.
Fusty?
I think when you just feel, you can just feel when you're happy. You don't have to go and do an adventure. You don't have to do anything like, you know, we are going to do to be happy and feeling content. You just have that feeling. And, you know, I've got two jobs, actually. I'm an advocate and I love being in law and I love that part. And now I'm doing this with Rian, and I love that as well.
Yeah.
And if I didn't like one or the other, I'd leave it. I wouldn't do it.
Tell me about sort of nurturing or enabling one's instinct better, because it's society that kind of conditions us to follow a specific narrative. And if you haven't done this by this age, or if you don't have that, or if you're not earning that, then it's not cool. And you should just have a job so you can pay off your car and pay off your house and everything like that. But conditioning, you know, your gut instinct, how does one get better at nurturing that every single day so that it's a voice that you really listen to? Because everyone has it, but some people kind of are hiding it in that corner or not allowing it to shine. They're intimidated by what society wants from them. How do you every day nurture that gut instinct?
I don't know. I can give Rian a chance now. I was a lawyer for 10 years, and while Rian was doing these adventures, I had to ask for leave from my boss. And sometimes I couldn't get leave, so I couldn't join Rian or go and visit him. And then Rian convinced me to quit my job. And then I quit my job and I started my own law firm, and that changed into going on adventure with Rian, and that changed into being an advocate now, where I've got my own time and living my life that I want to live. And it evolves, but you have to take that step.
There's two corners definitely to it. When you started now saying, how do you, I can't remember your words exactly, but it was something to the effect of, we get told, trust your gut, go with your instinct, blah, blah, blah. Don't go with what people clichedly tell you and what their reasons are for telling you. If you go to a seminar where a guy's telling you there are five secrets to being a successful person, what a load of hogwash. That guy knows nothing about your life. He doesn't know where you come from. He can tell you a couple of rules that can work, and I'm sure they can work, but that's not the secret to it. So the one camp would say to you, if your gut feel is saying to you, do this, you've also got to employ a little bit of intelligence that says, let's just go through two or three steps. Let's go, is it feasible? The law of economics still says you must have supply and demand. So if you're going to offer a product, still go with the heart, still go with the gut, but just answer two or three logical questions. We live in the modern world. Everybody at the time of me doing my bicycle trip thought I was anti-institutional. I was anti the world and economics and the way things actually do run, and successfully so. And unsuccessfully so. It wasn't. I was not against institutionalized workforces and earning money. I just felt that my life could be more. Was I making a right decision or the wrong decision? I tell you, for 2 years, 2 months and 15 days, until I got back home and only had 38 Rand in my bank account, I still felt I'd made maybe the wrong decision. In my heart, deep down, I knew I hadn't, because now I still had great stories. Making something of that bicycle trip, goodness, it was just a little bit of intelligence employed in saying, I've got a product people want to hear about. I'm good at this. I'm good at starting something, and I'm very good at finishing things. That's what I'm good at. Others aren't. I can sell this. And I did. I started selling it. When Fusty speaks now about her progress of where she is now living a life that is so much more free, and she has got her own time. Yes, it amazes me, because she's actually telling the story that I was witness to. And seeing her turn her life, wow, it's the absolute truth. The other corner, sorry, not to labor it, the other corner would tell you, stick at a job, you're getting a good salary, you're paying off your bills, you're putting money into your pension. That's also not bad. But I would sit in front of every person that's got the 9-to-5 job, Monday to Friday or Monday to Saturday, and I would say to them, you've got to renegotiate with your boss. You can't be working 5 days a week. You've got to be, a human shouldn't be working more than 4 days a week. It's just not in us. You've got many more important things. If you've got somebody who's happy 4 days a week at your workforce, they're going to be more effective,
more productive. Yeah,
of course, without a doubt.
It's I don't know where all these rules and regulations have come from. I mean, when we take a look at this word society, and we so often are governed by what we think society expects from us. And people may label you guys, you know, not conforming to society. But then in the same sentence, the second it's successful for the two of you, you get lauded by everyone around you saying, wow, it's so impressive. But in the moment, those initial steps, people are like, ah, no, not cool for me.
Yeah.
I mean, what this the word society, how does it resonate with the two of you? And how do you channel it in a way that it doesn't become something that governs you?
Well, I don't even think about it as being doing something right or doing something wrong. Like Rian said, it's nothing bad at having a 9-to-5 job, but make your 9-to-5 job something that you like. I don't see a difference between what society wants and what you actually want to do. Just marry the two and, you know, make your own life.
Media is definitely playing a part in how people perceive things. So your perception is created. You think a product would be cool, a technology product is cool, where some aren't considered cool. That's only what the media has perceived you to believe. So if you look back just in the century before, when media got stuck in through radio and then obviously through the visual format of TV, and now we're when they got stuck in advertising things and promoting things, you and I got a perception of that and a desire for all those things that were being put in front of us. Today, that is a million times more than what you and I had it when growing up, just with maybe the TV. The forces at play through your mobile phone will let you know that you still desire something. You need money to be able to desire that. And the only way that you can own those things are by working 9-to-5. That is not the way it works. It's definitely not. Money is an evil thing. It really is an evil thing. But money isn't hard to make. Once you start believing that the money is the God, ouch, it gets difficult in everything. In relationships, it gets difficult in the way you interact with your colleagues, because money is your focus and your God. It's ugly. When the focus is what you love and what you do, which again sounds like a hippie thing. Mm. It's not a hippie thing. It's absolutely not. Money comes. Your boss made big decisions. I mean, from being a superstar on radio, that's an inspiration. People would have said, what an idiot. What a crazy guy. What is he doing? That's exactly the pioneering spirit that I'm telling you sitting in every single millennial today. It's a lot spoken about. A lot of books are written about it. And they're saying the generation that is now the 15-year-olds and the 18-year-olds see the world differently. There's nothing more true. But in 10 years' time, the next generation, it's not 20 or 30 years we're talking about generation now. We're talking about the gap of 10 years. 10 years, the world will be perceived differently by them.
I guess the other flip side to it as well, in addition to, you know, the money aspect, the society aspect, is that some people are probably not at a point where they could sit on a bicycle or sit rowing for 2 years and just be with themselves.
Yeah.
And the thought of just being with themselves, or even just being with one person, like the two of you are about to set out on the single, which we'll speak about in a second, they would not be able to sit with themselves or sit with another person and be immersed in that experience for an extended period of time. And maybe that's also part of the big fear in terms of why people sure. don't just go and follow, you know, their passion or their narrative, because actually it's difficult for us to just be in our own space.
It is. Firstly, maybe I can add to it, but if you asked me what I deduced from what you said there now, that we have to be able to spend the time alone or with somebody and be secluded, which is painful, you have to be willing to suffer if you're wanting to achieve. For us to come back, Fusty says this thing when she speaks, and I love it, and I'm going to steal it soon from her, that my own speeches, is that she says that the fear of failure was a bigger driving force for her than the lure of success. Now, the opposite normally takes place in somebody's mind who's got this lure for success and glory. When you've got a fear of failure and you're saying, I'm not going home, I'm not going to get interviewed by Ari and have a good excuse, oh, why we did this, ooh, our boat sunk here and we had this problem. We're going to say, no matter what, we have to succeed before we come and have another interview with you.
Fusty, he's jacked your line.
I'm going to jack some of his now.
Tell them maybe about, yeah, not doing your best.
Yeah, I've got another one. He said, you know, when you grow up, people tell you, if you just did your best, you know, that will be good enough. Uh-huh. Like your parents, your teachers, that's it. And you grow up with that, oh, if I just do my best, even if I fail, I can pat myself on the back and then that's okay. And I feel it's not okay, because
the willingness to always fall back onto an excuse. Mm. So when I was on my bicycle trip, I had to phone back to Fusty, and I've only got so much money. I've only got 1 minute and 30 seconds and the thing's clicking off, and I'm saying, did you get the thing solved for me? Did you get the camera sent? And she said, no, she couldn't do it. She couldn't. She tried her best. And then I said to her, I had 20 seconds left. I said, don't do your best. Do what I asked.
Just do what I say. But what I wanted to say was, people use that doing your best as an excuse for failing. I did my best. But if I stopped, when we were on our rowing boat, if I stopped days where I thought I did my best, this is my best, I stop here, we wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have made it. You can always go further if you have to. Yeah. But people use that excuse as...
It's an easy way to get out
of it. It's an easy way. Oh, I did my best.
It is.
What a connection the two of you must have. I mean, people look at the state of couples in 2016, at the state of marriages, dated for 17 years. The level of connectedness you must have with a person when you've, you know, been out on an expedition with them where things can go wrong, seasons change. Like, that level of connectedness must be, you know, stronger than people that have been married for 40, 50 years who have worked 9 to 5s and seen each other in the evenings. It's unbelievable, that level of human connectedness between the two of you. I want to throw this word honeymoon into the context of everything that we've said. I mean, honeymoon, traditionally we perceive as, I don't know, lazing around, the fantastic parts of a relationship, like this highlighted period on a 20-year document of we were married for 20 years, our honeymoon was the best part, whatever it is.
Yeah.
In your context, honeymoon will mean that you're going to row from San Francisco to Hawaii on a 7-meter ocean rowing boat alone and unaided. The boat's going to be called Honeymoon.
Yeah.
And you'll be on your honeymoon till you reach Hawaii. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, do you realize how... Well, I don't know. Maybe it shouldn't be cool. Maybe this is what everyone should be doing. Maybe we shouldn't be saying, oh, it's so out of the norm. We should have them on interview on every single platform. And maybe it shouldn't be out the norm. I don't know.
I love it that you say that. We say the story is not about... Usually in this environment, people are beating the chest, growing big beards and saying, ah, look at me, I'm tough, I'm going to do this. That's absolutely not why we're doing this. We want a cool story to tell. The honeymoon is the story, the romance and the humor. The backdrop is the danger and the oceans and the seas and us rowing there and the physical side of it. We I'm glad you say that because we're trying to tell a romantic story based around the honeymoon.
Well, you look like a phenomenal NWJ ad just sitting here. I feel like they need to get the two of you on board. It's very, very impressive. Advice to people who are on the verge of giving up in a relationship with each other.
Sure. When we were on the boat, we had a bad time and we ended up not speaking to each other for 2.5 days.
Not one word.
And you can't get away from each other. Furthest you can actually get away from each other is 2 meters. And then you can still see the other person. That was very bad. What helped us in our situation was that we couldn't go anywhere else. You couldn't leave an argument there. You had to sort it out. And I think when you're not on a boat or not in a confined space, usually what happens was people leave and they leave it and then they get that out. And we didn't have an out.
Mm-hmm.
We had to sort it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had another journey that I did a few years ago, about 5-6 years ago, and it was around Iceland and sitting with somebody, you know, that was maybe not on the same frame or on the same level of commitment as I was or understanding of that commitment. I think that also made it a bit difficult. But when you're with somebody that knows what you're in for and you're in for the full 9 yards, it's a little bit easier. And I think with Fusty, when I spoke to her, she's been there every single journey and she knows I was always willing to give my life. So this one, I actually hate saying it, but Fusty also had to be willing to give her life. On that last journey, we did no human beings had ever, ever done that, ever in history, which is a long time. Mm. So here we row from Africa to New York City and I still don't know if we're going to be able to make it or we're going to make it alive. That's how scary it was. Fusty was willing to actually die to get to New York City.
It's so dope. It's well done to the two of you. What the hell am I supposed to ask now? Because it is so impressive and it's so cool. I mean, we've been speaking about, on the show recently in a millennial context, this idea of relationships don't last because of Tinder. You just swipe to the next person. There's no level of engagement. There's no level of wanting to make something work. It's this idea again of, I did my best. My best wasn't good enough. But was it really your best? Because you were thinking, well, it's so easy to just find another person. Mm. And I think that in that line that you just said just now about you were just stuck with the person, you had to figure it out and sort it out and you're all the better for it. I mean, that's the line that should be, every person going through a difficult relationship should have in the back of their mind and we should force each other to just confront the issues. Mm. Even in a South African context, in terms of where we're at as a nation, in a global context, if we just actually came out and said what we think and, sat in a room with one another, people of the world or whatever, and just kind of hashed it out, as opposed to said, well, not for me, I'm going to walk away from it because there's other stuff I can do.
Yeah.
It's actually a great metaphor for how the world could be a better place.
Spot on commitment. That's what it comes down to. What you just described was being committed. And commitment doesn't happen during the exercise. It actually happens before you start the exercise. So if you say, I am committed, and you say, I will finish this with you and I will see this through with you, then you're committed and that the proof's in the pudding. So later on you can say, I had no choice, but,
but you also said it, you have to want to.
Yeah.
Otherwise you just said, I tried my best.
Yeah. And it's hardest to say I want to because it also forces you to recognize that there might be something wrong with what you think or that you need to be challenged.
Yeah, for sure. Well, just to add on, when you spoke of something now with the world we live in, is just swiping on a cell phone screen to see what's next. We live in a world which is instantaneous. Mm. The one thing that you can't debate is that the things that people still care about in their lives and the things that are valuable to them all took time. Nothing was a swipe. And that's the scary thing. But again, you have to understand that and believe it and be committed to that idea. You can't be learning that in a conference. Can't write that note down and just say, shucks, what Rian said over there was the truth. You've got to say, let me actually digest it, because the things I value in my life all took time. None of them came immediately. You didn't order it. You didn't go online. But we live in a world that is exactly the opposite to that. But we want to have the world we have today, and we still want to have things we really cherish deeply. You can't. You've got to move from one world to the other. The real world, where you cherish things, and one where things are instantaneous.
While we're just dropping life advice, I'll just bring up every topic we've been struggling with on the show for the past 2 years. This idea of being in your own lane, and we, you know, alluded to a little earlier on, but I know for a fact, and I feel it, you go onto social media, you look at how other people are living their lives, and granted, they're curating it, and they're showing you the best of their experience, but really getting to a point where you are truly doing stuff that's in your own lane. Is it something that comes more with age? Is it something that comes with the more courage you build, the better you get at it? This idea of not comparing yourself to other people. Any advice on that? Because I think that's something that everybody struggles with.
Well, we're not 80, so we still compare ourselves to other people. No, I think that's just being human. But I can tell you, we're not youngsters. But it does... You don't care that much the older you get, because you focus on your own life.
Something beautiful about getting old and maturing, because I can remember being 25 and feeling that I was mature for 25. I look back now and I just realize I wasn't. I mean, I know now. What did I know? I knew nothing. Experience is an amazing thing. Experience usually 80% of the time is very uncomfortable. Experience isn't all the great times, having great times, great parties with your friends, everything working your way, getting paid salary, a great salary. It's sometimes not having a salary. It's sometimes not having friends to go out with. It's sometimes being lonely. It's all those little, not little, big, difficult 80% of your life that give you experience. Making decisions in our life now is so much easier and quicker because of experience. We spoke about a gut feel right in the beginning. Goodness gracious, gut feel only comes from experience. The worst thing for somebody that's getting old and has all that experience is that they can't use it, you know, because now they're retired. We just wish you could have that person in a 25-year-old's body, and what would they be able to achieve? Imagine with the knowledge. So, but again, man, it's not being in your own lane. You know, just make mistakes. Well, mentoring is an awesome thing. So if you've got a mentor and you can chat to them and be honest, you'll jump and hop, skip and jump ahead of all your competitors in the business. If you've got somebody who's willing to be honest with you and say to you, Ari, that was one of your worst shows ever, man. You didn't engage. I felt you were hesitant. I felt you weren't honest. I felt you, and you want to tell them, hey, who do you think you are? But actually, you could actually step back and say, shucks, I need to listen to this. You are 5-6 steps ahead of your competitor who will not listen to advice.
Listening as well.
Yeah.
Listening. Okay, well, that's just about as much as I can take of the two of you for one day before I'm crying in the corner there because of the overload. In a really positive, massively beaming, wonderful, powerful light sort of way. My final question will be to each of you. So Fusty, I'd like you to tell me what we should take away from the story of Rian Mansa thus far. And Rian, you're going to do the same thing for Fusty.
With Rian, he amazes me every day. He just doesn't take no for an answer. When somebody thinks something is impossible, Rian does it. It's like there's no rules. There doesn't have to be any rules because you can just overcome them. It's amazing what he can do. I'm amazed still what he gets done every day.
Just for the record, I do follow all the road rules and the other rules.
Not a taxi driver.
Shame, eh? Just to be perfectly honest, I think I've only got to know a little bit about Fusty thus far, and I'm very happy with what I've got to date. That's why I married her last weekend, and I know it's going to get better. So that's what I'm in for. I'm in for the long haul, and I think that's why you also want to have the long haul with somebody. So Fusty, she's actually multi-talented. Eh? If you ever come to Cape Town and you go to the High Court and you want to just see her in court and how she really, really gets stuck into something she loves, you know, go and see what she does in the High Court. It's incredible. And that also impresses me.
Very, very cool. That's Fasti Geldenhuis and Rian Mansa there, married a couple of days ago. They're about to set out on their honeymoon. They'll be rowing from San Francisco to Hawaii on a 7-meter ocean rowing boat, alone and unaided. The boat is humorously named Honeymoon. If people want to connect with your journey, how do we keep up?
Yeah, I just think
it's that lovely superficial question after the great conversation.
No. We just tell people, listen, we don't give www's because that's ludicrous. Yeah. People know how to use the mobile format, put in either of our names, go onto your guys' website, put in a word on honeymoon. Just it's not difficult to find people. And then what we always ask when people get on those platforms, send us messages, man. Mm. They mean so much. We're going to have connectivity when we're on the boat, so we're going to be 4,000 kilometers into the Pacific Ocean, and we're going to be able to get a message from somebody sitting, listening to your show, interacting with you, and sending us a message not to give up.
So, so cool. Rian and Fasti, thank you so much for stopping by, and have a great honeymoon.
Cheers,
cool.
Thanks.
It's back.
Are you Jawsy tough? Cycle through tunnels, over floating bridges, and into colossal stormwater drains. You're a machine, and nothing's going to stop you. With two separate routes, a 22K for beginners or a 54K for the tougher riders. Go where no mountain biker has gone before. On the 29th of May, ride the Hollard Juma. Brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Challenge accepted. Juma.co.za. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.